All right, we got Josh Notes, founder of Sustain CFO. I'm excited to get tactical today because we met Josh probably closing in on a year at this point, Josh, right?
And yeah, I think so.
We linked up, I think at the time, Landon and I were like not fully aware of what our offer was just yet, but we knew that we didn't offer CFO services, and we knew that Josh's service was a really solid supplement and complement to what our clients needed in their world. And so I'm excited to get very tactical today, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys. I've been thinking about getting on here with you guys, I think, for 9 months, and now we finally put it on the books. So let's go.
Let's do it, man. So with that, CFO, let's start there. What even is a CFO? What does a CFO do? And then walk us through the journey of how you even got to where you are today, because there's levels to this thing. So would love to learn a little bit more about your story and then kind of where you're at now, and then we'll get tactical.
All right. So I'm going to answer it in the order you asked. So a CFO is the strategic financial leader of an organization, whether they be internal or fractional and outsourced like our firm. They need to be the ones that are consistently looking forward and hopefully looking toward what we call the financial North Star. So every business has some kind of game plan. If they don't, that's a problem. But what you really want to make sure is that somebody is always looking forward and elevating the executive conversation and the numbers out of the day-to-day, out of the weeds of operations to the high level, you know? So that's a CFO. What we're talking about as far as services provided is what we call FP&A, financial planning analysis, rolling forecasting, financial modeling at a deep level in every aspect of the business. And then we also do M&A advisory services. So if it's time to sell or you're looking to exit, that's something else we provide, as well as buy side services if you are looking to build a platform and attach other businesses to that. So that's a little bit about the CFO position. I'm sure we'll get more into that. And then my story background is that of the serial entrepreneur. Got started, you know, in ventures, middle school through high school. Real estate was my first kind of foray. Ended up in the energy sector. Built and scaled up one of the larger energy efficiency service businesses in the Mid-Atlantic from about 2008 to 2016. Business model kind of sucked, to be honest. And that's where I kind of, over the last 3 years of that business, got my chops of figuring out how to forecast and dodge bullets and ultimately roll into a bankruptcy. So we can get into everything today. I'm willing to get as deep as you guys want. But I really have lived the experience of not having a CFO, and then went ahead and built this system for it, and brought a partner on to take it to the next level.
So built the platform out of need for yourself, not taking the route of what I would assume is traditional, like getting into accounting in college and then going like the bookkeeping route, CPA route, then transitioning to this world. Built it out of need. So how have you continued to expand your skill set as it's been relatively like uncharted territory in your world and in this industry?
Well, I love the nautical reference. We love that at Sustain CFO. I'm definitely not an inventor. I'm more of an innovator in my mindset. So I look for other people doing things the right way, and then I try to copy it and do the best I can. And in this space, it's not rocket science. There is a recipe for it. I think we've innovated on that a little bit, but my wife actually took more of the traditional path. So I've sat across the table. She's a controller of a private equity firm in the DC area. And, you know, she reports directly to the CFO. And so I've kind of seen what that looks like for the past 15 years. I sit across the table from the money, but I don't have enough of it. So I've been helping my clients who don't have enough of it to figure out how to map their way in the entrepreneurial journey. And then most importantly, I brought on a partner. So I was running more of a CFO light with coaching model. And heading into the pandemic, I realized I could take about one or two more clients on, or I needed to build a system and I needed partnership to do that. So I brought on Phil Maffey. We went all the way back to college, went to school and studied finance together at the University of Maryland. And he had been doing multi-billion dollar acquisitions, integrations, and all sorts of cool M&A stuff in Wall Street adjacent, New York, New Jersey area. And so that's how I leveled up, was I partnered for it.
That's great. I had a question, more of a fundamental one for our listeners more than it is for us. And we operate in this fractional capacity as well. How would you define fractional? So if I'm a business owner listening to this, and it's like fractional CFO, what the heck does fractional mean? Because usually when, at least initially, when you hear the word CFO, you think like the CFO of Microsoft or the CFO of Apple. They're not doing any CFO work for other companies, right? So would you mind just kind of defining what is fractional? And then also, second question to this is, like, you mentioned dodge bullets. Like, what are some bullets that you see flying in the air that our listeners could potentially be able to dodge just by a few best practices? So what is fractional? And then, like, best practices, bullets flying that you see typically?
Cool. So for me, you know, fractional is look at a pie and you probably don't need to eat the whole pie, right? It's best to have like a slice of it. Same thing goes with a CFO, unless your company's already at 50, 100 million plus. But, you know, the counter side of that is that most businesses don't reach for any outside financial advice. Maybe they have a CPA that they call their accountant. A lot of times they do the bookkeeping themselves as the leader of the organization, and they end up getting tied down in the weeds. They usually don't execute properly. And it also it allows them no chance to kind of disassociate from the numbers and elevate to the executive level and look at the numbers and ask, what are they telling me? Because they're spending that last bit of time that they have, you know, late at night, weekends, whatever, putting the books away as opposed to strategically looking at the numbers and asking for, you know, real-time information. So fractional to me is just in time and kind of built around the business and what it needs. So we start small and meet our clients where they're at and scale up. Just as far as numbers wise, usually $500,000 to $1 million is kind of a starting point. Our sweet spot is kind of in that 2 to 10 million in revenue that we're finding folks inflecting where their company's doubling every year or three, and they really need these financial processes in place to make the critical decisions so that their next decision is not that, you know, that final misstep. So speaking of missteps, you talked about the reference to bullets flying. You know, we're talking critical hires or fires. We're talking about bringing on vendors with long-term contracts, negotiating your key supply chain relationships, understanding your pricing model and how that creates your margins, and then how you redeploy those margins back into the business. And then ultimately, you know, making suboptimal financial decisions out of a position of what is apparently need. But sometimes it's just because you think that's the only choice you have, right? So we're talking about taking on high interest debt. We're talking about taking on equity at the wrong valuation from the wrong partners who offer no strategic value. These are like the major, those are like cannon shots. You take one of those, you might only be able to survive two of them.
So the absolute lifeblood of the business, when we talk about it all the time, is like business is numbers. Your business is not your baby. Your business is your asset. And so with that, we need to treat it as such by getting the right data. And the data allows us to provide constraints around what we can or can't do based on the proposed budget and the projections and things like that. Now, I want to get a little bit more in the weeds, if possible, because most of our clients that work with us are service-based. And service-based is a little bit different than just a direct-to-consumer product type-based business as well. Because, you know, what I'm thinking through is like, okay, cool, we have marketing campaigns. Even our sales cycle might be stretched out longer. So how do we make sure that we're floating the ad campaigns in the front end, make sure we don't run out of money before we can even realize revenue? Or construction businesses that always get up in the situation of robbing Peter to pay Paul because they don't have good project management. Walk us through the model around how you create a suite of recommendations for service-based businesses and like what that client journey looks like from a foundation to an advanced set.
Okay. So I'm glad you brought up the difference between product and service. My background and experience is much more in the service as an entrepreneur. So I know that I've lived that world. And that's where a lot of my pain came from in those last ventures. But I think it really is still the same offering. It just might be the time to realize the value, like you said, kind of shrinks if you have a, you know, somebody's paying for your product and receiving it right away and cash is flowing. In the service world, there is a lot more around what I call the cash conversion cycle, or, you know, quote to cash, however you want to call it, that can be, there are things you can do to manage that. We've been able to find ways to help people even invert that cash cycle. So it goes from having outstanding AR to having actually a liability that they owe the service to their customers, but they've already collected. Obviously with that, you're now able to accelerate the business a lot better. But, you know, you asked kind of, where does this begin? Where do we start with folks? So we start with an evaluation process. We call it our deep dive onboarding. You know, within 4 weeks, we've really got all the way down to the bottom of their ocean, figured out what's going on, What do their processes look like? Who are the people involved in making financial decisions? What does that cadence look like around that? How does the executive team receive that information and then make decisions with it? We provide a series of, you know, recommendations. We do not, you know, diagnose without information. So we don't do that on the sales process. I think it's really important that businesses make sure they provide enough time to understand what's going on before they just start taking actions randomly. And then with that in mind, we build a rolling forecast process, usually within that first month as well, as long as the owners are available. And what that does is it takes what many know to be called the budget, and it takes it from this stale once a year thing to a dynamic every month or even more frequently, depending on the business, process. So a controller, your in-house accountants, your bookkeepers, they're all looking backwards at what happened. Your strategic financial leader needs to be looking forward, and the rolling forecast process is a actual production of taking the information from historical to forecast, right? And with that, you start to have foresight and insights that can lead the business forward.
Expand more on that, because that's where I was going, is like, what's the value of being able to forecast, right? Everybody can look back and see and look in the rearview mirror, but what does being able to look through the windshield do for a business owner and their organization?
Okay, so it does two things. One is it removes a lot of danger. I give the analogy, you just hit it. If you were to get in an Uber and the driver was looking in the rearview mirror for the first couple miles, how long until you would ask him to pull over so you could get out? Because that's just ridiculously dangerous. Okay,
that's great.
95% of business owners that I've interacted with that don't have any strategic financial, you know, help, they are looking at their checking account. That's how they're making decisions. I have this much in my checking account, therefore I can do, you know, Y or Z. So that is the first part, is it just gets you looking out the windshield and thinking about what's coming as opposed to looking backwards, which is how most people start. So that's just a paradigm shift. But then making really accurate assumptions and decisions is not really the goal. It's to make assumptions, to measure those, and to determine, like, why was I incorrect about that? And by how much was I incorrect? And then iterate on that process. We believe really strongly in this, that it's not about perfectly forecasting. It's about, like, think about the weather. It's like, you don't need to know whether it's going to be 62 or 65. You need to know whether it's going to be, you know, 40 and raining or 75 and sunny. So you know what clothes to wear, like, you know how to prepare for the trip. So I think that's really more of the way to think about it. And then where this gets really exciting is if you start to bring on investors. And again, if you're telling them what happened in the rearview mirror, you're not going to have happy investors for more than about a quarter. And so to really change that dynamic and start to tell them, hey, this is what we're predicting happened. And then instead of the CEO feeling like they're jumping in the hot seat during the quarterly meeting, they've got a report that tells them, you know, actual versus forecast. Here's the variances. They can take their proper time to explain those, so that they can create a really good communication strategy with those investors, who will then bring in other investors and, you know, propel the business forward.
So to that, I had a question more about, like, businesses during a recession, okay, right? Some people are alluding to winter's coming. They've been saying it for a couple of years now. We'll see, yeah, right? But I imagine forecasting being one of them. But what are some other things you see businesses do to stay afloat, maybe even thrive and not just survive during a recession? Forecasting probably one of them, but what are some other things business owners could be thinking through as we may approach some turbulence with an election around the corner and some turbulence in the market?
Okay, quick story. So worst day of my business life was not when we went out of business and rolled into a bankruptcy, because I kind of saw that one coming. It was a week before Christmas, probably 3 years before we went out of business, got a call from our major contract, and it was the electricity company, basically. And they told us, you know, we've cut your contract in half. And I didn't have this process in place. So pretty quickly ran some numbers that were not that well thought out. And I fired half the company that afternoon, right? 20 people had to go. I had to pick the 20. I did it in isolation. I felt terrible. Not only that day, but for weeks on end. And I probably cut a little too deep, if I'm being honest, thinking back on it, right? So now imagine that that situation occurs, but I've been doing a rolling forecast process. I know exactly what my headcount looks like. I know what we're estimating. And I get these numbers and I plug them in. It would probably have told me, hey, you need to cut this much in overhead. And I would have already had my employees, you know, ranked as far as, you know, whatever criteria, performance reviews, and been able to make that decision and at least feel better about it, if nothing else. But when you talk about a recession that may be pending or whatever, I think, you know, two things kind of come to mind: customer concentration and cash on hand. Okay. So some folks are going to get affected depending on what industry you're in, unless you're perfectly recession proof, which is a buzzword anyways, because depending on where the recession hits, like it may end up kicking your butt. So what does that look like? You know, what would happen if you lost 20% of your revenue? What if you lost 40% of it? You can make scenario analysis occur if you have all this information in front of you pretty quickly. If not, what happens is a lot of times we find these executives are just kind of driving around in between dropping their kids off at soccer practice and heading to the next meeting or whatever. And they're just like in their head going through all these loops of like, and then what if, and then I'll do this. And then what if, and like, there's no process, and it wastes a ton of mental energy. It makes them fearful. And when that day actually comes, they haven't actually prepared for it. So I think, you know, ultimately it's more about like knowing what happens if an engine goes out, you know, knowing what happens if a wing fell off, where would you take part of the plane in for a landing, or however, you know, whatever analogy we want to use. Like, that's the process that this takes you through. And you can actually get pretty confident pretty quickly to go, okay, hold on. I know, worst case, I used to do A, B, C, D, E, right? Like, these are the worst case scenarios in order. And if those happen, here's what I'll do. And I just had that on hand in my next iteration, and it's been super helpful. It's like almost like get out of jail free card, because you're like, all right, I've already mapped through this in my head and I don't have any stress around it. It's just, I'm going to, you know, make decisions as they come with the information and the model I have in hand.
And this is why I think it's so important as people continue to grow in their business that they're outsourcing to someone like you, because you're giving objective feedback, right? Like, you don't have equity in their company. So you're literally there to, you know, run the data, build out constraints around them, and, you know, help relay this to the business owner so that they can continue to focus on growth. Now, growth, that word specifically, sounds really sexy, right? Everyone talks about like, oh, I'm in growth mode. And I sometimes think that they use it as a reason to just spend more money or like bloat their payroll. So with that, help us navigate growth mode with our clients here, like through potentially like a case study and stuff like that. Like, how does a company navigate the world of growth, and how do you start thinking through controlling your margins, when to stay more profitable, when to potentially reinvest back into, you know, specific positions or equipment and things like that? Walk us through your thought process there when you're coaching your clients.
Okay, great. I'm gonna start with two things. One is, my experience is that growth is the most powerful drug that I have ever used and chosen to continue using. Let's just put it that way. Okay, like, it is very powerful, and you need to treat it with real care and manage it as such. The second is that we use the word sustain, not on accident. Sustain CFO came from, you know, our kind of origin story as a company, but a lot of people think of sustain as like a plateau, right? Like, that's like how it's been branded in the media. But if you actually look up the definition of it, that's not what it means. It means that you must have enough resources to exist and carry forward on your path towards wherever you're going. And so we look at sustainable growth being what we try to get our clients to get around in the direction of that financial North Star. And what sustainable growth means is that, you know, any of these decisions you're making have enough time that you can be, you know, right or wrong within two deviations of, you know, a bell curve and still stay on your track. Because, you know, this rocket ship emoji that everybody attaches to what they're thinking, like, it kind of only works on software. And if we're really looking at what it creates as far as an ego and a company culture and stuff, like, the results aren't that good down the road. So if you're building every other business beside one of Elon Musk's, which you probably are if you're listening to this, then you're probably looking more for sustainable growth, not just growth. You had a couple more questions. Let's dig into those.
So I guess that starts to beg a question, which is a great nuance that you just brought up there. Now, people sometimes choose to be reactive about growth. Like, hey, we're having a lot more top line come in through awesome ad campaigns, let's say, for say, and now we have to go scale. Now I have to go hire out more fulfillment. Some people choose to scale before they grow in preparation of growth. What's your philosophy on that?
Well, I think you've got to, I mean, unless you're, it kind of depends on, are you overcapitalized, right? Which also known as like being West Coast funded. Like, if you just got a bucket of money and you don't even know what you're really doing, but you've got this really high valuation because you convinced investors on a lot of hype that you're going to change the world. Well, then maybe you really do have to find this growth and you got to find it immediately and you got to prepare for it immediately. If you're doing more of what I call kind of the East Coast, you know, lean startup mode model where, you know, you figured out a minimum viable product, you've innovated on that, you're reinvesting your margins. Maybe you got enough working capital to make some bets, but we're not talking about like, you know, just throwing money out of airplanes. Well, then I think it's a constant balancing act, right? It's okay, what is our projections for growth? Let's make sure that it doesn't outstrip our capacity. If we execute on our sales and our marketing goals this month, this quarter, it's not going to crush the morale of the operations team because we're going to run them at 140%. So let's make sure we've got kind of just enough. And what I encourage folks, and I learned this actually in the power industry, is that the whole grid, the energy grid, which has to stay equally balanced within two 1/100ths of a second. And that's just like some physics there. But if you think about that, do they try to get every ounce of energy? No, they run it to 85 to 90%. Like that's where you should be aiming, is to basically be running 85 to 90% of capacity and then have this overflow for the just in case, where you say, okay, if sales were to be better than expectations, we already know who could come in and work Saturdays as an example or whatever. Sure. Right. Or we've got this flex resource. We've got a bunch of flex resources. So our FTEs, full-time, you know, equivalent employees, add up to 90% of capacity, but we've got this flex that takes us to 110%. So thinking about things in that matter allows you to have options. And I think options ultimately, you know, lead to choices, which lead to better decision-making.
I love it. I love it. Now, shifting gears a little bit, have you ever heard of the book Profit First?
Yes.
Okay. So it's only fitting that we ask this in anticipation. We're interviewing the author next week.
Okay.
And I'd love your take on the concept. Like the concept sounds great, but then the execution sounds like, I mean, it almost sounds a little bit too elementary, but then there's advanced techniques. Like I would love your take on how that book could potentially be useful in someone's world, or if there's any pushback you have on it.
All right. So hold on. I didn't read it. I just got to say this before he listens to this and is like trashing me. I didn't read it, but I kind of get the concept. And actually, I'm going to go the other angle and say, here's what I agree on in what I think it might be about, but I haven't read it. Okay. Is I had a post this week on LinkedIn about this, where you're the sole owner of your business. You're making a critical decision. How do you know whether you're making that decision from your business personality or from your personal like personality? Because I have a lot of clients that'll tell me, oh, I'm doing this decision for the business. And then I'm like, oh, great. Tell me how you came upon that. And they justify it with something personal. So what I think is that a business needs to find profit and it needs to pay people accordingly. Now the owner can take home less than maybe what they could make in the market. That's part of starting your own business. But if the business doesn't do that and you don't create profit, what'll end up happening pretty quickly is it'll kind of get wrapped around the personal ego and it will become a lifestyle business where all the resources go to that supporting that lifestyle, and it won't be able to grow because it'll get choked out from its growth basically engine. So that's my take on it without reading the book, but maybe by the next time we talk, I'll have read it.
I would say in a quick snapshot, it's just a matter of coaching clients to put themselves, you know, first to some level, you know, pay themselves and build that into their overall like ecosystem of flows and cash flow. But yeah, I think it's more for, and Tony, I'd love your feedback if you think I'm off here, but like after reading the book myself, I think it's for the business owner that's not paying themselves enough. It's really good advice for someone who's not paying themselves enough out of their business. They're kind of like living really, really tight just to keep as much capital in the business as possible. I think it's just trying to be for me, it was a really good reminder of like, hey, it's okay to take money out of your business. Like it's okay to not, you know, starve, so to speak, right? But outside of that, I had a question on when to hire in-house versus to hire fractional. And like, what's the evolution of a business look like over time, you know, into where it makes sense for them to actually think about hiring in-house? A lot of people we run into, they could be in that 1 to 10, 1 to 15 million spot. And their initial thought is, oh, I have to hire everybody in-house. I have to make an in-house hire. Like, just riff on that a little bit, if you don't mind. And then at what point does a business get to where it's like, it is time to hire a lot of in-house bodies?
All right. So I want to clean up what I was saying on the profit first. Now that you kind of I think, and I'd love to hear what the author has to say about this, but like, there's probably three phases. Like in the very beginning of what the business is, you got to make sure the business is alive or else you'll kill it. Like Golden Goose story from childhood, right? Then you kind of get it up and running. And if you don't pay yourself, number one, you'll starve and you'll make suboptimal decisions because your personal world's starting to mess up. And second, you will trick yourself, especially if you're not doing any of this forecasting and modeling, because you'll think the business is more profitable and has higher margins than it actually does. So in all those reasons, I would say, okay. So then back to your question about fractional versus in-house. I look at it as, I mean, it kind of depends on where you're at in this journey. If you're looking for an exit, like right around the corner in the next 2-3 years, you probably need these folks to be in-house and feel some level of commitment, because you're trying to effectively kind of transfer them onto somebody else's, you know, world, right? And like, but at the same time, if everything is working, there's nothing wrong with the, you know, outsourced fractional model. But I think a lot of this depends on kind of industry, what that culture needs to look like. I think we've all gotten a lot more comfortable in the last 5 years with the concept of remote and, you know, offshoring and other things that are kind of tied into this fractional. But I think if you can't afford a full time, but you need the role, it should be fractional versus waiting till you get the resources for internal. And I think it really depends on what that role is. Like your chief operating officer probably should be internal. Your CFO probably doesn't need to be anything other than fractional, again, until you're at 100 million plus, unless you're trying to sell the business with the CFO attached to it and they're a key, you know, critical decision maker. So that's kind of how I look at it. But, you know, VAs and, you know, marketing and, you know, sales functions. I mean, a lot of that stuff, as long as you get the incentives right, like I don't have any problem with it being outsourced.
I love it. So for whoever's listening to this, who should be reaching out to Josh Notes? Like what ideal client avatar do you serve? What point? I know you had mentioned like 500 to 1,000, 2 to 10 million. What type of industry do you serve the best? Like, walk us through who your ideal client avatar is so people listening to this know if you're a fit for them or not.
Awesome. Appreciate the opportunity to plug.
The non-shameless plug, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're listening and you are making all the financial decisions yourself and feeling stuck by that decision-making process, or you have a partner or two and you guys don't have a process for coming together around those, and there's a lot of friction that's related to making financial decisions, and it leads to either kind of taking the decision back into one corner where maybe it's not fair to everybody that nobody else gets to weigh in on it. That's kind of what it usually feels like when folks find us and they go, thank goodness this relieved all this pressure. It's like having a outsourced, you know, partner in the business that doesn't have the same stake, but acts like it and understands the numbers and gets everybody to elevate right out of the gates first 5 minutes with none of the, you know, nuance minutia that comes with knowing, you know, the operational details of the business. Regarding, you know, size, if you've taken on money and you've got investors already at any scale, you know, $1 million plus in investment money, you should probably be thinking about, you know, treating it really well and investor relations really focused. And if you've gotten to the point where, you know, you've got 10 people plus on the team, you know, where a $30,000 to $50,000 a year executive role makes up less than 5% of your revenue, you know, that's kind of another kind of indicator. Industries we focus on, energy, I mentioned, real estate, health tech, mental health, advanced computing. These are the ones that me and my partners happen to have our own feed in as entrepreneurs. So we focused there, but we've worked with all sorts of, you know, educational, online companies, product companies, really anything where the numbers really matter and where the owners have a vision of where they want to go, but maybe they haven't mapped the numbers to that vision.
I love it. Well, if you're in that client archetype, reach out to Josh. How can they reach out to you?
Easiest way is go to sustaincfo.com. You'll see a couple of bright buttons to book a call. That call will come right to me. You get 30 minutes free. We'll have a discussion, jump right into your numbers, kind of meet you where you're at, find out what's going on, figure out what a couple next steps could be. And then no pressure at that point. If you want to take next steps, we'll take them. If not, we'll just stay in touch, you know, using digital communications.
What's the vision? So where's the vision for Josh and his team and Sustain CFO? Like, you'd mentioned you're kind of meeting the client where they're at. And, you know, having Josh in your corner, I can speak from seeing it firsthand. Like, there's going to be a lot of growth that's going to happen from having that clarity and being able to make those decisions a lot quicker and a lot more efficiently and more and at a lot more of an accurate pace. So when clients are growing, what's your vision in growing with your clients and then your vision for you and your business?
So we ourselves are holding ourselves to the same sustainable growth path, which means, you know, doubling probably every 3 years. It's going to be a little harder to do it any faster than that without outstripping resources. Myself, my partner Phil, we've got, you know, one handful of CFOs already. We'll probably be, you know, at two hands full within a year or two. But really, for me, I built this business with the partnership to support my own asset development. Like, that's my why. So I'm building $500 million worth of clean energy assets in my sister company, EFW and the Energy Artisans. And this is what's going to take care of those assets in the long run. And there's some really interesting intersections, I would say, between our clients that we think we're kind of the only people that could happen to have this insight, right? These are non-publicly traded private companies. And as an example, there was two companies in the mental health space, and one had put all of its resources into this, you know, AI engine to figure everything out. And the other one had figured out all the human resources to have the extra flex capacity of therapists around the country available, right? And you put these two things together and it's pretty interesting business model, but the two of them would have never bumped into each other or likely seen each other as competitive if it wasn't us going, hey, you guys should get to know each other. We're not going to give anybody's private information that, you know, other than pointing to websites and saying, set up a call. But I think those intersections are where we'll have the most impact when we look back on this a couple decades from now.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, we love what you're up to, man. We're very happy and blessed to have you in our network and can't wait to continue doing business together, man. Have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thank you, guys. Take care.